I'm Roy Sexton, LMA member and Director of Marketing with Kerr Russell. I recently came back to legal marketing after a hiatus, and I could not be more thrilled with my decision. I can feel the impact I am making with my firm, and I give the lion's share of credit to what I've learned through LMA. LMA gave me confidence and certainty in my new role, despite the hiatus, by keeping me informed about what's happening in this industry, and I haven't missed a beat. I can't begin to tell you how good that feels. Because I'm so appreciative of what LMA membership has given me, I am here today to encourage legal marketers, old and new, to take advantage of a special offer from LMA. LMA is offering prospective members access to the latest Strategies Magazine issue, a members-only benefit, by visiting legalmarketing.org/podcast offer. That's legalmarketing.org/podcast offer for more information. Thanks for listening to the podcast and this advertisement, and I hope to see you at an LMA event soon.
Hello, and welcome to the LMA podcast, featuring thought-provoking conversations with legal marketing and business experts. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hello, and welcome to the Strategies Live podcast on law firm budgeting best practices. I'm Jonathan Fitzgerald, managing partner of Equinox Strategy Partners, and I'm here with Robin Gerard, chief marketing officer at Stradling, Yucca, Carlson, and Rouse. This podcast is part of the September-October 2017 issue of Strategies on the topic of budgeting. Be sure to take advantage of the offer shared at the start of the podcast for Strategies Magazine. Given Robin and my backgrounds, in-house, big firms, small firms, we both believe that the best practices that we're going to share with you today will apply to firms of all sizes. So, hopefully you can leave the podcast with a few aha moments or practical takeaways that you can apply directly to your firm. Let's go ahead and get started. Robin, many of us are at that stage in the year where we're either beginning the budgeting process for next year or we're already in the throes of it. Whether you've already got a process down or you're proposing one for your firm for the first time, what do you think is the first step at getting your arms around the budgeting process?
Well, thanks, Jonathan. The first step is really kind of an obvious one, which is getting a handle on your spending in the prior years. So you need to sort of analyze what's been spent in the past in whatever form you can get it. And so one of my biggest pieces of advice here is to make sure, if you haven't already, you've got some friends in accounting, or you can talk to the CFO, or even just find an analyst in the firm who can get you the numbers. And secondly, the other tip here is, once you have the numbers and you can review them, because that is the real first step, if you have a chance, try and get the real story from accounting on, in terms of either an individual attorney or a practice or a particular client, in terms of realization and how profitable is that attorney, that practice for the firm, because you might often hear a completely different story from a practice chair or even from an individual attorney when they're in budget season and trying to get money to spend on business development for the following year. Some of these things you can do even if you're not in charge of the budget and even if you don't have input to it. So I would just say the first step is to get your arms around the finances. And if you can, go back three years and see where the numbers are trending.
For those that are perhaps in smaller firms where the budgeting process is not streamlined or we're not super sophisticated when it comes to budgeting, do you ever get the sense, Robin, that by marketing, asking someone in finance or someone in accounting for the numbers, that all of a sudden people in accounting start to ask questions like, why do you want these numbers? What are you going to use them for? You've never asked for this before.
Right.
I know in my experience, whenever I've started something like that, sometimes just merely asking the questions can put people on alert. So what's your suggestion for the ask so that others don't feel like we're taking over their territory?
Well, ideally, you would have, you know, made this sort of friend or have a contact in accounting before the budgeting process starts. But if you don't, you know, one thing you can say, and Jonathan, you make a good point, because particularly if you're in a position where you're just managing a few practice groups or industry groups, and it may, you know, you're, and you didn't have any input in the budget in the first place, you know, they may be asking, you know, why is she asking for budget numbers? And I would say to them, you know, that you want to get a better handle on what the strategy is for that industry or practice group so that you can proactively during the year reach out to partners ahead of upcoming speaking engagements or conferences and ask the partners what you can do to help prepare them in terms of researching attendees or researching the companies that will be there. So turn it into the value add that you're actually trying to provide. That would be my suggestion.
My experience too, you know, again, depending on the sophistication of your budgeting in the past, when I have asked accounting for marketing dollars spent before, a lot of times the GL accounting codes are not super well defined. There are expenses that show up in one column that really should be categorized elsewhere. I mean, again, depending on the sophistication, it can really be a cluster at the beginning. And so part of our role, if we're doing this for the first or second time, may be spending a lot of time trying to get our arms around it and trying to make sure that things are coded correctly, that the accounting categories are set up properly to begin with. Marketing is going to know better than professionals in the accounting department, you know, what exactly should be spent in which category, how do you define the different spends. And so I'm just warning people, the first or second time that you do this process could take an inordinate amount of time just to get things organized properly so that moving forward you can do a better job of tracking ROI and getting your hands around what are real numbers spent.
Right.
Robin, what do you think?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, it can take a lot of time, and it also feels like, you know, in whatever role you're in, that this might be work that you weren't, you know, you don't feel when you're doing that maybe like you're, you know, doing business development for the firm. But the way I like to look at it is the marketing budget and where you're spending your money is the strategy for the firm in so many ways. So it's a really important thing, and when you're in the midst of the line item coding and it's hard to get out of the forest during that process, I have to remind myself this is the strategy of the firm. And in order to have some influence over it, even if you're just managing one practice group, this is really important. It's important for those partners in that group to understand where they're spending their money, and you need to have a handle on it. So that's just a piece of advice while you're in the weeds of doing coding.
With many of the firms with whom I've worked, I find that budgeting for 2018 is going to be a percentage of what was spent in 2017. And mm-hmm. So much like Congress does, we take a look at what was budgeted for 2017, where we think the firm revenue for 2018 is going to be in terms of a forecast, and then we adjust the different categories based on a percentage. That happens pretty typically. It makes it easier to budget that way, although I don't know that it's the most effective. Robin, do you see any advantage in starting in a zero-based budget every single year or from one year to the next, depending on what stage you're in the budgeting process, just to kind of clear out some of the cobwebs or some of the stuff that is in the budget, but you don't know why it's there, but it's historically or traditionally always been there?
Yeah, I can see the advantage of that, because what tends to happen over once something gets in the budget, it tends to stay in there maybe longer than it should if there's no ROI. So if you're starting from zero base and you're starting from scratch, then that gives you a chance to re-envision what you want to do either firm-wide or for a practice or an industry group. So I think there's a lot of advantages. It's more challenging because, of course, it's more time-consuming. It's easier to take your budget and then sort of take your budget from the previous year and go through and say, do we still want to do this? Do we still want to do that? So, but I think it's more, it could be more challenging to do zero budget, but it might actually work better.
There have also been experiences that I've had with the budgeting process where attorneys really either don't want to get their head wrapped around the number of different accounting codes for marketing, or it's just overwhelming to them to deal with all the different categories. And so in the past, I've tried to group activities so that it's more digestible for firm leadership. For example, if my marketing budget has 20 different line item categories, firm events, you know, meals or entertainment for clients and prospects, sponsorships, all these different categories, what I've done in the past, which seems to really resonate with attorneys, particularly in leadership, is I will group the various line items by categories or buckets. I call them buckets. So, right. For example, one bucket could be business development. And within that bucket, and again, this is how I'll communicate it and get it approved through the attorneys to try to streamline the process. Within the biz dev budget, I will have client prospecting. I may have client meals and entertainment. I might have, you know, client sponsorships. These various activities, which all fall under biz dev. A second category could be visibility, where there's a line item in there for the PR agency. There's a line item in there for networking. There are all these, you know, maybe website goes into visibility. And then a third bucket that I've used in the past has been attorney development or professional development, where if I do coaching for attorneys, that may fall into there. Dues for groups or, you know, various bar associations or other things may fall under professional development, just so that as we're going through the budget with firm leadership, either for the first time or from year to year, I can say overall, this group of line items we want to increase by 10% for the next year because we want to put a focus on it. Or the firm has come to me and said, hey, we want to ramp up the business development initiatives of the firm. I want to make sure that the budget reflects firm priorities. Any thoughts along those lines, Robin, just so that, you know, it's one thing to have a budget. It's a whole nother thing to be able to communicate it and get buy-off.
Absolutely. At my prior firm, we had to defend the budget in front of the executive committee once we came up with all of them. So that was somewhat challenging. But, you know, your idea of the different buckets is something that I think that's pretty widely used. And it's really important, like Jonathan, like you said, in the atmosphere where you see spending going on. Let's say it's under sponsorship and events, and you see that people aren't showing up, that tables are empty, we're really not seeing the ROI, but you know separately from firm leadership that we need to put more money into business development or client service programs. So the budget is, you know, going through that process is a way to start to hopefully shift that funding. And, you know, if you've got those buckets going, you can show them. If they say we should be spending 50% on business development and client service, you know, that's a good way to go.
Switching topics for a minute, Robin. So we've looked at the numbers. We've done kind of an initial analysis of where the spending has occurred, either in the prior year or the past few years. In an effort to kick up the budget process a notch, what are your thoughts on categorizing or allocating dollars either based on attorney or based on practice or based on an office of the firm or even within the marketing and business development departments themselves? What are some of your thoughts in terms of how to allocate them across those different areas?
I think that's, you know, that's a tough question because it's case by case. I like to look at it as practice group, individual, so individual client development spend, office branding, and then maybe the firm-wide BD initiatives, or, you know, that fourth bucket is really marketing, and that can be, you know, for a wide variety of things, including client feedback interviews, key client teams, business development related training, all that type of stuff. I'm currently at a firm where we don't have any budgets, so it's more of a monitoring. We've made an attempt to, you know, kind of put everything in buckets now, but you know, I agree with what you said. And the one thing I would add here is use your whatever your budget numbers are, whatever the firm says, you know, firm wide we're gonna give $1 million to client development, and that includes individual and it includes practice groups. Use those numbers during the budgeting process to tell your story, because what sometimes happens is people start griping. Oh, the firm is not gonna, they're not gonna let us spend as much money. The spend is going down, and when in fact the opposite may be true. And you can say to them, you know, over the past 5 years, our spend for, you know, client development has gone up 87%. And it dispels a lot of rumors, so it's a very important thing to kind of use those numbers to tell a story. And, you know, we've had practice groups saying, oh, that practice group gets too much money and spends too much, and then you can show them, look, they do get a lot of money, but they're very specific in their requests and the business case for them. So you can kind of use that as a teaching moment through the numbers, even if firm doesn't have a strategic plan or anything that's sort of overarching. Use those numbers to dispel rumors about budgeting and who's getting what and how it's being spent.
How do you come up with the numbers originally, Robin? Are your firm's attorneys required to submit a budget every year along with their business plan so you can see what they have in mind? I mean, are partners coming to you saying, based on my goals for 2018, I'm going to need $20,000 from the firm, and here's how I'm breaking it up? Or is the firm's approach, you know, whatever the partner's practice is, we're going to give them 2% and earmark that towards a partner's marketing spend? How do you even come up with those numbers to begin with? Or how do you know what should be the number and then how often to monitor it?
So I have a few thoughts on that. That 2% number, maybe of the attorney's book from the previous years, is pretty standard. But a lot of firms also look at, you know, what they're bringing in as a working attorney, managed, sourced, which, you know, tends to be the biggest number. What kind of business have they sourced? Some firms take it a step further and look at cross-selling efforts by that individual attorney. The other thing I would say, sometimes your biggest rainmakers, when you're going through this process, don't need as much as you think they do. They may have two or three clients that they're servicing, and they have a pretty set amount of what, and they're not doing as much, they're not doing as many dinners or as many of those things. So it's a good time to ask them how much they really need. And look at what they've spent, particularly if over the past few years you've given them 10 and they've spent 5. It's a good time to have a conversation with them, at least, because you may have up-and-coming partners or new partners or other attorneys where that money can be shifted. And, I mean, I've had attorneys actually say to me, I don't do a lot of business development. I have these three big clients. Anything I do, which is a couple dinners, relates to them, and I'm done. So definitely dig in a little bit to see what's going on with those numbers.
I can remember the first couple of firms that I was at early in my career, someone from accounting would show up at my office about this time and say, okay, Fitzgerald, we need a marketing budget for you for the next year. And I'm sitting there going, I've never prepared one before. I have no idea where to start. I have no idea what the overall number should be. I know it's generally accepted that firms that are proactive in their marketing will typically spend between 3% and 5% of the firm's overall gross revenue or projected gross revenue. They'll earmark that amount toward marketing and business development. Do you think that still is fairly accurate, Robin?
I think it's probably fairly accurate, although you're going to get wide variances from firm to firm. I think that's probably fairly accurate.
At least it's a place to start.
Right.
And then
absolutely,
the other thing that I've seen super successful, instead of taking on the pressure of coming up with these numbers myself, I've always tried to align an attorney's budget with their business plan, their annual business plan. And if they don't have a business plan,
This is a great way to increase your value to the firm and your stature within the firm by going to the attorney and saying, listen, accounting has asked me for a budget. I want to get a sense from you, what are you looking to accomplish next year, and how much of the firm's resources do you think that's going to take? If an attorney will submit a budget, conferences they're looking to go to, a certain amount of money that they need for wining and dining, maybe there's sporting events that they want to take a client or a prospect to, maybe there's a networking group that requires dues that they want to join. If they'll line item that as part of their business plan, then as I'm reviewing the proposed business plans, it's easy for me to take a look at individual attorneys' requests and say, yes, I think this is in line, or this person is spending way too much based on their success in the past. I've also had situations where an attorney will submit a budget, and quite frankly, I think it's too low. Have you ever had situations where perhaps the budget will flag someone that's not doing enough based on their spend?
Yeah, absolutely. And to go back actually to your first point, like ideally you would have a business plan from everybody that the firm requires. But if you are in an environment where that's not required, you can still, and I'm in an environment right now where it's not required, you could still go back to accounting and they will have a record of what individual attorneys are spending on business development efforts. And that's really important. You can at least get some kind of, you know, you can get your arms around that. And that, and further to your point, Jonathan, that's where you can also see who's spending a lot and who's not spending anything. And, you know, I tend to be more interested almost in the people that aren't spending anything. So it's an opportunity for you to talk to the attorney, see if they're in trial or there's something else going on. They're not doing any business development. Obviously, if the partner is doing a lot and you don't think that it's in the right areas, that's another opportunity for coaching that attorney. But in the absence of a business plan, which is the holy grail that you would have, you can still pull those numbers from accounting. And again, when you reach out, if you think they're going to push back, tell them why, because you're trying to coach the attorneys and you need to see where they're spending their money. And in the absence of a business plan, that is sometimes the only way you can get a handle on which clients they're seeing and what they're doing. So that's what I would say.
Although the generally accepted principle is that marketing professionals have a magic wand and a crystal ball, we can't plan for everything during the planning process. How do you normally handle requests that come in mid-year that we're not budgeted for, that we didn't foresee, but are good use of the firm's resources? How do you have some kind of a slush fund? Do you have to go to management every single time each of those occurrences surface? How have you generally handled that, Robin?
Well, first, I would not call it a slush fund, only because internally the optics of that will be very bad, and it will look like this is some unbudgeted, unlimited, you know, not strategic.
Unnecessary.
But unnecessary, right. So I would call it a reserve. At my prior firm, we had them in almost all the practice group budgets. It was based on the reserves from the previous years. It usually also was the first thing to get cut during the budgeting process when we were asked to cut things after we submitted our first budgets. We always, for better or for worse, ran above that reserve. So because you just can't, you know, a client is getting honored at a dinner and it's a big client and you need
meaning what, you exceeded it always or you fell underneath it always?
We always exceeded it.
You always
spent it. In the practice groups. Yeah, we always spent it. And some of it, you know, it's at when the request would have to go to the practice chair to access the reserve fund. But things came up, you know, our biggest clients were being honored at an event or something where we really, and we had to contribute on a major level, like $20,000. So, you know, I think it's a really, really good thing to have. We also had a reserve for lateral recruiting because we would have partners coming in and they had already committed to conferences and events or, you know, were used to spending a certain amount in their own client development. So we also had that one. And then we had yet another one at my prior firm for like, you know, and we have this here to a certain extent. If people have to travel for a pitch and it's not their client, they could access a different budget instead of using their own personal budget for that.
I've also seen situations where firms get hit up all the time to sponsor charity events or nonprofits, and those table fees can add up very quickly. So, you know, and it can blow through a reserve very, very quickly in some instances. One of the things that I've seen firms do successfully is they will earmark a certain amount of the budget for goodwill purposes. So if your overall marketing spend during any 1 year is $1 million, the firm might come forward and say, we want to take $50,000 of that million, proposed million, and earmark it for goodwill, do good type activities in the business community. But once that money is spent, it's spent. And one of the reasons I like that earmark is because it feels as though we in marketing are not really held to showing an ROI on that event. Everybody knows at the outset, this is to demonstrate we are good members of the business community, and no one can come to marketing and say, what did we get for that 50 grand? Everyone knows going into it, hey, this is the purpose of the money. And again, if it needs to get cut, fine, but that's really an executive committee or management committee level issue. That's not a director of marketing, chief marketing officer, marketing professional decision to be made.
Yep, I agree.
Speaking of firm politics, I don't think as marketing professionals we ever want to get in between a partner and their request to spend firm money. How do we stay unbiased in this process so that we as the marketing professionals are not deciding whether something is worthy of firm money or not? We are just good stewards of the firm's resources.
That's a tough question. You know, in terms of if you're actually doing a budget for the following year and you're going through that process, it can get political as well. And I would say try and engage firm leadership if it's not already in place for that process, or a practice or an industry or a department chair, make them part of the process. And sort of the individual requests. So at my firm, anything over 5,000 has to go to the executive committee. So because we don't have a set budget in place, my department, at least for now, is fielding a lot of individual requests that fall under that. But they could still be significant. And I think there are some days when this takes up a lot of time, but I also think that you have to also look at it as an opportunity to coach the lawyer that is making that request if you do not think that it is something we should be spending our money on. So if you at least have prior year spend on this, what we've done here in some cases where we are pretty sure we're not going to see an ROI, we've sort of talked the lawyers down a bit. If they wanted to sponsor at $5,000 the previous year and we knew the table wasn't full or something else, we've talked them down to $2,500. So we do have these individual conversations. Hopefully when we get a strong budget in place, we'll have less of them. But for now, I have to look at that as I'm still getting an opportunity to coach that lawyer on business development and ask the questions, you know, who's going to be there, that those types of things, so that they start thinking about this. And for some of the maybe more community-based events, like maybe it's the March of Dimes or something that they want to sponsor, you know, we have asked them to pay half of what they want to sponsor out of their own, you know, out of their own money. But, you know, it's a tough area because it takes up a lot of time and there's so much politics around it, but it does give you an opportunity to counsel the lawyers and create a deeper relationship. So that's what I would say.
This is another good reason why I like budgets being part of an individual attorney's annual business plan, is because when I go through their plan and I look at the correlating budget, if the budget looks appropriate, I will suggest to the executive committee or the management committee, in my opinion, the plan and the budget correlate very well, and I try to get the executive committee to rubber stamp it so that we don't have to go back to the executive committee every time someone wants to spend a dime.
Right.
When there
are requests.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, the other thing I would say is, and this seems really, really logical, but it happens all the time, is if you have access to it, look at the, if they're asking for a certain client spend or a community event that a client has asked them to buy a table, look at what the fees are for that year for that client. Because if it's $50,000 and the person's asking you for a $10,000 table, you know, that's, or even maybe a $5,000 table, that's not a good percent. That's
gonna
not
happen.
A good percentage. Yeah. Well, but it seems logical, but you know, sometimes we forget to look there. We take the attorney's, you know, story that this is a big client. It could be a growing client, and that's separate. But if it is a long-term client and it's $40,000 every year in fees, and we're at being asked to sponsor a table for $5,000, we, you know, that takes some of the politics out of it.
Yeah. The other thing I'll do too, if there's a request that comes into my department, and I know that it's not money well spent, I will oftentimes use the executive committee as my excuse to say, listen, I'm more than happy to run this up the chain for you, but at this sponsorship request level, I have to kick it into committee. It either has to go to the marketing committee for discussion
right.
and approval, or it's got to go to the executive committee. And we all know, wink, wink, how those take forever to get approved. And so sometimes as you talk about negotiating with the attorney and trying to find the right level of spend, a lot of times in my negotiation, in my coaching, I'll use the executive committee and say, listen, I don't really want to take this to them because I think it'll take too long and it will keep you from moving forward with your plan. Is there another level, a less level,
right.
that would satisfy you on that?
Absolutely. And we've been doing that, again, it goes back to your earlier point, Jonathan, those conversations, again, they're a coaching opportunity, but also if in the back of your mind, you know that strategically we are going to need more money for a technology platform or a business development coaching program, those are the kinds of conversations that are strategic and that you have to have. So, you know, they're important. And I know you're right that, you know, once I tell my lawyers here, listen, you need to send an email to the executive committee because that is, you know, over $5,000 or you want to buy a $2,000 bottle of scotch for your client, they really have to believe in that to go and send that email. So
the last issue that I want to discuss on our podcast today, Robin, is this idea of incentivizing and encouraging attorney behavior and business development behavior through the budgeting process. Sometimes either people aren't familiar with how to do it or firms come across as so cheap in the budgeting process that attorneys won't make the request or they won't ask for firm resources because either they're afraid that it will make them stand apart from their colleagues or it will come across as too greedy or too much. Other times you have attorneys that don't mind asking for the moon and back. Have you seen generally any firm policies or ways of handling these things that encourage attorneys to do more on the biz dev side as opposed to holding them back?
Well, I think the one thing that might seem that some attorneys view as holding them back is actually the thing that does encourage them, for the firms that give individual attorneys a budget and then tie it to a plan. I mean, we all know having a written plan always results in more goals being achieved. And if you know you have money to spend, whatever it is, and you know you don't have to go through an approval process because you've been given 10, you have a plan, you can spend that as you want, that actually should encourage. A lot of people see it as, you know, well, I don't have enough, but we find, you know, they're not spending it all year over year. But I actually think the more locked down that is, the better off the attorneys are and the more strategic they have to be about it, and they're making smarter decisions. When they can spend whatever they want to spend, I don't necessarily, you know, see rampant spending, but, you know, they may not be thinking through it as much as they would if they had $5,000 or $10,000 and they knew that's what they had. So that's what I would say to that.
I definitely like the idea of giving individual attorneys, both at the partner and the associate level, a general guideline or marketing spend. From a firm's perspective, that doesn't mean it's a blank check. Those attorneys still have to be accountable for the firm's resources, but it gives them some guidelines, and I think it allows them to make the decision, yeah, I'd love to do A, B, and C, but based on my parameters, I'm going to have to choose between A and B as opposed to someone in marketing choosing or someone on the executive committee who just wants to punish me or be negative to me, and that's why they didn't approve my request. I love empowering people to make those decisions for themselves based on where they think they're going to get the biggest bang out of the marketing buck.
Right. And remember,
I've also,
in most firms, what they sometimes don't take into account, or in some firms, there are other programs where money's being spent for their advantage. Like if there's a coaching program or a client team program, I mean, those things are also all sometimes going on in the background, and that's real money the firm is spending to help them be a better business developer, independent of their individual spend. And frankly, if there's practice group budgets, some of them also have access to that. So.
Yeah, good point. Well, our time is up for this podcast, but Robin, thank you very much for your thoughts on the budgeting process, and hopefully everyone has learned a few aha moments from today's discussion on ways that they can kick up their budgeting process an extra notch for 2018 and make it that much more effective.
Thanks, Jonathan.
That concludes another installment of the LMA podcast. To discover all that LMA has to offer, visit legalmarketing.org. For links to content featured in this episode, please check out the show notes. If you like the podcast and want to help others find us, we hope you'll take the time to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Thank you and have a great day.